Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.
Podcast.
Listen to The Organist, the culturally omnivorous, intellectually ravenous podcast from the editors of The Believer magazine.
Part of poetry is learning how to speak.
Chilly Billy, Chilly Billy.
I am also a horse.
I really value my life, even though I know it's debatable whether I'm even really alive.
The right reading for this is the one I'm giving you.
Find The Organist on KCRW.com or wherever you download podcasts.
From the Independent Producer Project of KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. Unfictional is a program of true stories and personal documentaries. And today on the program, a story of spiritual possession. One night when Christian was 19 years old, he says he met a series of voodoo spirits in Haiti. They possessed a woman who was visiting his father's house, and then they talked to him, through her, for hours. And then about 15 years later, he was still haunted by the events of that night. He went back to Haiti to find out what it all meant, what he was supposed to think about this thing that had happened. Plus, he wanted to find out more about the rituals of Haitian voodoo and the people of this small Caribbean nation where voodoo is a religion and a way of life. But a strong warning that this program contains descriptions and sounds of animals being killed during a ceremony, which certainly could be upsetting, especially to children. If you feel you may be disturbed by this, I suggest you skip this episode. And now, from KCRW and KCRW.com, it's Unfictional and Possession.
I once saw a woman become possessed right in front of me. Her eyes glazed over. She shook. And then she wasn't there anymore. Someone else was. I was in Haiti, land of voodoo. But I wasn't at a ceremony. That's where possession normally happens. Everything at a voodoo ceremony is about calling the spirits, the loas. I've seen the spirits ride the people there before. I've been a guest at several temples. But this was nothing like that. This was in my father's house. At night after dinner, a woman got possessed right there and started talking to me with the voice of voodoo spirits. All right, that's the story I'm going to tell. This happened more than 15 years ago, and I guess in the meantime I didn't know what to do with that story. It was too weird and too intense. I never understood the meaning of it. Was this a bad thing? A good thing? Was it okay that I spent 3 hours talking to spirits? That I made agreements with them? A couple of months ago, I went to Haiti again. My father has lived there for 25 years, and we have never talked about that night. Not before now.
I remember it as if I said goodnight and went upstairs. And yeah. She was dancing by herself.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you called me.
Yeah. Because I got scared. She was possessed and she took a kitchen knife. I don't remember how it started. She said that she didn't want to go to a voodoo ceremony. And I didn't understand, but she said, I don't want to get possessed. She knew she could not control it. That's basically it. She was very conscious about that. She was conscious about her own ability. In other words, she was very used to voodoo, and she didn't want to have anything to do with it, and especially not together with us.
So, 15 years ago, I was visiting my dad, who at that time lived in a sleepy town called Charcmel on the south coast of Haiti. This was 11 years before the earthquake in 2010. But still, Haiti was the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, as well as the first independent black republic of the world. This is a proud country. A country that ripped the white collar out of the French tricolor flag when they beat Napoleon's army, threw the French plantation owners out, and declared the country their own. They sewed the blood red and the ocean blue back together again, and that's still the Haitian flag today. There is a saying in Haiti that it's 95% Christian and 100% voodoo. One night when I was staying there, we went out to eat at a restaurant called Yakimo, right on the beach in Jacmel. I don't remember what we had, but I do remember that we were there with a woman called Dorothy, my dad's girlfriend for many years, and her friend who was really shy and rarely talked. They'd grown up in a small village, some way from Jacmel, and were staying for the night in my dad's big house. The restaurant was under the open sky, the sand under our feet. You could hear the waves every time there was a break in the music. When we got back to the house, we put on Michael Jackson, and I noticed how drunk Dorothy had gotten. She was sort of dancing in her own world. The song was Earth Song. I went upstairs to my room in the big colonial French brick house when my dad suddenly called me. His voice was strained. Something was wrong.
Yes, I remember that. That's the crazy part of it. It was not voodoo drums. It was Michael Jackson that triggered her possession that night.
The original slaves that were brought to Haiti came from the west coast of Africa, and they each brought their own local version of a spirit religion with them. And all of these systems evolved and mixed and became something else in Haiti. So Haitian voodoo is both its own new thing, but it also has roots that go hundreds and maybe thousands of years back. This time in Haiti, I'm invited to Souvenance, a small village that every year is the ceremonial ground for a big gathering of mambos, that's priestesses, and ungans, priests, from all over Haiti. Here they perform a very specific and arduous three-day-long ritual. I'm going to find a guy there called Eddie Lubin, who is an initiated scholar of voodoo. I hope he can answer my questions. I hope we can clear up if what happened with Dorothy that night was okay. I leave Cap Aïchan, where I'm staying, before dawn on Easter Sunday and drive over the mountains, through villages with no electricity or plumbing, just spreading out right there in the jungle. People are emerging in the cloudy morning light, dressed in their finest church clothes. Every girl's hair is combed and decorated. Every boy is dressed in a clean, crisp shirt. Old men look like lords. The women are beautiful. Driving in Haiti is one of the things I love most. At Souvenance, a windy desert village at the foot of the mountain, the ritual is already underway when I get there. All the mambos are dressed in snow-white dresses with white scarves on their heads. They're dancing intricate dances in the middle of a great voodoo ritual hall with place for the drummers on one end and observers, voodooists there to witness this important day, on seats along the edge or standing up. Two goats are carried in, their throats slit. The mambo stands around with them and hold them still twitching over their heads so that their blood, sacrificial holy blood, streams down and colors their white dresses and headscarves. Animal sacrifice is an ancient tradition. The ritual killing in voodoo ceremonies dedicates the life force of the animal to the spirits, feeding or nourishing them, while the community will feast on the meat itself. Some of the dancers start showing signs of possession. They look fatigued, they move in fits, grabbing others for support, making high-pitched noises or rolling their eyes. The other mambos grab them, help them to keep dancing, to hold it at bay still. So early in the morning, so much ritual left.
Okay, so that's how it started. And then she was lying on the floor, right, spasms. And I remember her girlfriend, she was unable to help, unable. She was scared. That was what scared me, because I've often seen at ceremonies when people are getting possessed, they are helped by other people in the community, the members of the voodoo society. They're always helping people who are possessed through it and out of it, finally.
When I came down from the upper floor of my dad's house, I helped my dad as we carried Dorothy to sit on a sofa. She had removed her clothes and was completely naked. At that point, I thought she was sick, epileptic or something. But then at that moment, she calmed down, opened her eyes, and it was clear that nothing was as I thought. What was not Dorothy anymore started talking in Creole to my father and I. Her voice was changed, deeper and determined, aggressive, with a quality I had never heard in her. I looked to her friend for some sort of advice, but she was hiding behind a chair. She looked terrified.
It must be very heavy what's happening, very heavy. That's what I thought, that's how I interpreted it. I thought, well, she's deep in possession and the girlfriend cannot think of a way to get her out of it. That was shocking, I think.
So I thought, what do? We help her, you know, you pick her up and try to get in contact with her. Yeah. But then when she came to, she wasn't herself.
No, she was another. Definitely. And it was quite clear for some reason that she was possessed by Ogun. That's a war spirit. And that dictated her behavior. And that's how it is in voodoo. You do what the spirit that you're possessed by demands of you. She was written, my Adrian says, she was written by Ogun, and she became very aggressive suddenly, right? And that's when she went to the kitchen, right? And took a kitchen knife, a big kitchen knife.
At ceremonies, I've seen people possessed by Ogun dance with knives and swords and bend machetes against their bellies.
In that situation, she was very strong. Very strong. We could not physically control her. She was very strong. I didn't know what was going to happen. What can we do? What can we do to calm her?
This is where things changed for me. This is where I found out that this was not going to just go away. We couldn't calm her down and her friend wasn't helping. This was voodoo, and we had to do what the voodoo priests normally do at the ceremony. Help the spirits through this.
She was my friend, my girlfriend, and I had a relation with her. And I thought that was a factor that we had to get around. I felt that I was of no help of that. In that situation, you needed to be there. That's what I thought. You were an unusual man. You were able to maybe understand what was happening better than I, because I was also privately involved with her. That would not necessarily help to solve the situation. You understand? That's what I thought. That's what I thought.
So in the middle of the night, in that big old house, I put my fear away and changed my perception of the situation. When I think of it now, it sort of reminds me of when my wife gave birth. I had to face something that seemed scary and violent and larger than me, and then go actively into it, make a difference. I moved out of myself and into a new situation, one where I could deal with the spirits. Outside the ritual hall, I'm told not to smoke cigarettes in the area. All the mambos are coming out of the hall now, led by two old ongans, voodoo priests, in blue shirts. This shifting to a new face in the ritual is marked by the blowing of conch shells. And the oldest of the two priests sit down at a big, gnarly old tree. The group of white-clad mambos start singing behind him, and as the drums kick in, somebody brings the ungan, a live rooster. Methodically and ritually, he breaks first one wing, then the other wing, then both the legs of the still living bird. Then he opens its mouth and pulls out the tongue. And after that he twists the head, and the bird is finally dead.
And she was in another state for a long time. That was also what scared me a lot, that this possession lasted long, long.
At one point, Dorothy passed out again, and I thought it was finished. But then she was taken over by Gidi. And this was where I really had to step up. I had to go all the way. Stop talking to Dorothy to get her back. Stop acting as if this wasn't real. As if I was dealing with an accident or a problem. I had to address the spirits that were now talking through her. And Gidi is the spirit of death in the cemetery, but also life and the creation of life, of sex. Gide sees both worlds, this one and the spirit one, and he is a mirror to our own fears and prejudices. So in other words, Gide doesn't give a damn what you think. He's both lewd and profound at the same time. He's not wild and aggressive like Ogun had been, much more relaxed. I remember looking into Dorothy's eyes, or into Gide's, and there was such a force. Such a screw-you attitude. He told me in Creole that he did not want to speak French, that I would have to speak Creole. I don't. And he took one of my hands, like when you greet someone, and he took hold of the other one, so that my arms crossed. And then he shook them so hard I could feel it in my spine. I got really frightened.
The voodoo handshake?
Yeah, the voodoo handshake.
Yeah, that's with crossed hands. Your right hand crossing your hand to the left, and then she takes both hands and shakes them. And this can be very strong. This can be. I've often seen that as a change to possession. I mean, I'm very aware of that, and I want to avoid to do that too much. I'm not susceptible to be possessed, but anyway. I'm afraid of exactly that voodoo handshake, because you can be turned around physically. That's a means to get you possessed. So that's very typical. And she wanted to do that, surely. She wanted to get you involved directly.
Gide asked for rum and for a cigarette. My dad said I should give him money, just anything. It's a symbolic thing. So I handed him a couple of gourds. That seemed to please him. And Gide smiled at me. He was really quite charming.
As Gide, she must ask money. That's part of it. She must ask rum, she must ask money.
And he took my hands, and I had forgotten the last time, so he shook them so hard, I thought my shoulders came out of their joints. He was really in my face all the time, speed talking in Creole and smoking, asking for rum, sitting there naked in a chair, singing songs. Dolce's friend was still hiding behind the big basket chair, looking over the top of it like a comic book character. Gede would snarl at her. I didn't understand what he said. But the third time he took my hand, I was ready. I grabbed it, I grabbed the other one, and I shook him so hard. I was getting tired of this guy. I was not in any relative cultural mode anymore. I was just a bit fed up with Gede. He had been in Dorothy for more than an hour. And I remember after I did that, shook his hands, Gede just looked at me, smiled and nodded, said something like, good boy, bon garçon. And I told him I would speak French because I didn't know Creole. And if I was to help him and if he wanted rum or whatever, he would have to speak French. I felt kind of desperate. After all, he had come here. But after that, he did speak French. There was a new feeling there. Like now he maybe respected me a bit. A bull has been killed. A dagger was thrust straight down into its neck, and its blood was mixed with rum and blessed and shared by initiates and some VIPs from the local government. After, the ceremony moves to a square basin in the middle of the village. Water is essential in the souvenance ritual, and as the conch is blown, the white-clad initiates enter the basin and seem to become possessed the minute they touch the water. They fall down and whoop and roll their eyes back in their heads, submerge themselves and rise up out of the murky brown water like magical creatures. It's intense. A young woman in a green tight dress, a bystander, is sprayed with water and somehow that instantaneously transforms her and she falls down, possessed with a big splash. She writhes and shakes as the spirit rides her and she becomes part of the ritual. The guy I'm there to meet, Eddie Lubin, is in the water as well. His stately gray beard and bloody headscarf go with him under the surface, and he emerges again as if in a trance. Later, when this part is over and there's a break in the day's ceremony, I'll meet with him in a small house made of concrete bricks. I have something I want to ask him.
Why is a Haitian woman getting possessed? Without a ritual, without anything.
No, y a pas besoin d'avoir un rituel pour avoir une crise de.
There doesn't have to be a ritual for possession to occur, he says. Not for voodoo initiates. Possession is one of the functions of voodoo, and it can come as a reaction to something else in life. There is no need for ritual. What you're describing is not uncommon, he says. So I tell him the entire story, and I think he can hear in my voice. I need to find out what happened and why. So he tells me about voodoo, that it's both a physical and ethical and a bodily thing, that we can't speak of a voodoo, but of several voodoos. They're different from village to village, and their roots are varied. He tells me that the spirits, the loas, are part of our souls, our consciousness, that they're aspects of ourselves as much as they're magical spirits. And I ask him one last time.
Hello, so when you hear this story, it's not that strange.
No, pas du tout. C'est le quotidien des gens qui ont.
No, not at all, he says. This is the everyday of the voodoo initiate. My wife is a mambo. She is like that.
J'ai l'habitude de ça.
Okay.
Voodoo is intense and can seem violent or scary to outsiders. But as I've come to go beyond those things that seem alien to my own spiritless culture, the sacrifice, the possessions, I've glimpsed something of the bigger context behind it. The coherent web of deities, or loas, that voodooists contact through magical rituals, the never-ending music of it, the drumming, the singing and the dancing, the beautiful symbols and overwhelming art. This is an entire worldview, an image of reality.
I can't remember it so precisely. It's very good that you are trying to reconstruct it, because it has to be reconstructed. It's such a rich story. It's such a textbook story of voodoo possession, I think. So it would be very good to put every piece in place, I think.
I remember that Dorothy was possessed by at least two more spirits that night. One, Ashley, was completely different from Giddy, gentle and kind, and I could talk to her. The second, Dambala, is the father spirit, the snake that created the world. I couldn't talk to him. He was on the floor, writhing. But I remember that Dorothy finally collapsed, exhausted, on the floor. Now we carried her to her bed and said goodnight to her friend. And I remember looking at my dad, saying goodnight, and going to my room, an empty but potent feeling in my chest, an exhausted newness. When I tell this story now, it's very important for me to tell it as honestly as I can and not to jump to any conclusions or easy explanations. Because the thing that changed for me that night was not one of religion or belief. It was more fundamental than that. It seems to me that the world is defined by our perception of it, and that our perception is an active force that actually changes reality. Dorothy didn't choose to become possessed that night. She didn't get any benefits from it. There was no ulterior motive, no exertion of power, no community building, no psychological process. It happened because that is what happens to a voodoo initiate.
What do you think her feeling was? Dorothy's?
I don't know. I never talked to her about it, because it's like, I think contrary to what we think, there's maybe a feeling of shame or something like that. But that's, she should be proud of it. She did a full textbook version of several spirits in that evening. And she can be very proud of that, I think.
The next morning, as I was sitting by the breakfast table, she and her friend silently descended from their room, ate breakfast, and departed.
She never went back to that memory. Never.
You've known her since, and she's never talked about it.
No.
And the thing I take away from it is that the nature of what happened is not remotely as interesting as the facts of it. Whether what happened was magical or psychological is only interesting to people who like to argue. And if I focus on that, I miss the experience of it. I forget what I was privileged enough to see. I can only tell what I saw and what I did. A woman became possessed right in front of me, and it was real.
Possession was produced by Christian Laith, edited by Nick White and myself. And you will definitely want to head to the episode page at kcrw.com for some beautiful and spellbinding photos taken at the voodoo ceremony in Haiti. It's at kcrw.com/unfictional. And by the way, we're getting close to the 4th annual radio race. It's your chance to create your very own radio piece within 24 hours. Do it on your own, or even more fun, make a team, go all night. And you could win some excellent prizes, including having your story on this very program. The race itself happens on August 6th, but you'll need to be signed up before then. Deadlines, prizes, rules, etc. It's all at kcrw.com/radio race. I'm Bob Carlson, producer of Unfictional. The editor is Nick White. The associate producer is Carla Green. Join me next time for Unfictional from kcrw.com.